Hello, listeners, and welcome to the second episode of our Reading Cove podcast, where a few group members get together to talk informally about the current month's pick. For February, we're chatting about Flesh and Fire by Laura Ann Gilman. Start off introducing ourselves. I'm Millennia, the Cove's founder, and I live in Florida.
I'm Cheryl, and I am a co-moderator here at the Reading Cove, and I'm in Tucson.
I'm Monica, off and on member for 10 years. I live in Nebraska.
And welcome, you two. It's so nice to be able to meet up with you guys and chat about our pick.
Yes, I think it's lovely. And Monica, welcome to you for joining us this time. I greatly appreciate it, and it's a joy to hear your voice.
Yeah, I'm glad I could make it.
Yes, Monica and I were chatting last night, and I told her that I was like, it's so nice to hear your voice. And put a voice with the typing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because we know what she looks like and everything from Facebook, so that's cool, too.
Right. Yeah, it's really cool.
It is.
So Flesh and Fire is our 123rd Cove pick, and it was chosen by Catherine. She's been a member of the Cove for about 2 to 3 years or so. She's not with us today, but she really enjoyed Flesh and Fire. She gave it, I think, a B or a B minus. So she liked it pretty well. And so we're meeting today to chat about it and share our thoughts on the story. So let's just dive right in. What did you guys think?
Well, the author is Laura Ann Gilman.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed getting into it, but it turned out to be very, very slow for me, and to an extent where I stopped halfway through the book. It just didn't appeal to me. The characters didn't seem to develop. There was too many secrets going on. And I just could not finish the book. And fantasy is right up my alley, but it wasn't as exciting or, moving right along type thing. Mm-hmm. Monica, how about you?
I enjoyed the book. Fantasy is not really my genre, but I liked the, I don't know if it was necessarily fairy tales, but the kind of the fables that were going along with the story. Mm-hmm. About the gods and the kind of the past stories. Mm-hmm. And even the history of the grapes. I thought, wow, that's creative, kind of using grapes and wine to have spells. And I enjoyed the story. I liked from the beginning, I liked Jersey and kind of hearing what's going to happen to him. And I felt bad for him because, you know, he was constantly being told, speak up, tell us what you're feeling. And for, you know, the first 15, 16 years of his life, he was brought up that he couldn't have thoughts or feelings.
Right.
Being a slave. So I thought, well, he's not accustomed to letting his thoughts be heard. And
yeah, this was a huge journey for him, and a huge transition for him to go from being a slave to a master vine art. But that's how vine arts, that's where they come from. That's the, you know, they're molded into vine arts from that slave life.
What I was amazed at was when Master asked him what his name was and he couldn't remember his name.
He was a slave. And
he was a slave. It didn't get, you know, named. But what I remember from Roots is, you know, you named your slaves.
But that's,
you know,
Roots.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, it's just, you know, it's, slaves are owned,
right?
And you still name them, even though that he didn't know his own given name. He wasn't named by the master at all.
Right?
They had names from each other in the slave house, because I think they called him Fox Fur.
Mm-hmm. Something.
Right?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah,
what they,
yeah,
called him.
Because that nobody really knew who he was, or, you know, they just nicknamed him. You know, by the way he looked and everything. And I was really stunned at that one, that he couldn't remember his name for the longest time.
I think he forgot his name. And I mean, I read the book version of Roots, and Yeah, they when they were given their own names, they pretty much forgot the names that they had before.
Yeah,
they were...
I just remember Kunta Kinte would not accept his American name.
Right.
You know, that was a big major scene to me in the book and the movie, and he fought about it. And here, Jersey couldn't remember his name at all. And, you know, it was his given name by his parents, and he recalled having a sister. But that was it. You know, he was sent into slavery.
How old was Jersey? Because in the beginning of the book, I got the idea that he was like around 10. But then later, it seemed like he might have been 13 or 14 or even 16. So
I was thinking more 15 or 16 because he had a shadow of a beard. He wasn't old enough to shave yet.
Right.
And that's, you know, I look at the, you know, the way the kids grew up here and everything, and all of a sudden you're seeing hair coming out of their chins. And I'm like, okay, so he must be around 15 or 16 years old.
Okay, yeah, because in the beginning it sounded like he was younger, or at least he looked a lot younger than he was. Something like that.
That's probably because of his size. And he wasn't, you know, healthy looking and everything. He was very skinny.
Yeah.
And they put a lot of weight on him. I think that's one of the things they tried to do. Who was the maid, Detta?
Yeah.
Detta.
Yeah.
I liked her.
I liked her too. And she would roll her eyes, you know, if he gave her. I was like so cute because he started coming into his own a little bit, and being more responsible. I just thought it was sad that the master really didn't help him much. You know, he was doing a lot on his own, and this crisis came about, and then, you know, you really didn't know what was going on with the crisis.
Well, you're talking about Master Malik, who Jersey was owned by, and Malik took Jersey, or noticed that Jersey had something special.
Yeah, he had a power.
Was the one, you know, and when wine spilled on him or something?
Wine spilled in the field. The whole vat of wine overturned, and he just stood there frozen, didn't help pick it up.
Right. And that's how Malik...
Yeah, there was something wrong with the vat of wine.
Yeah, but that's how Malik noticed that Jersey was the one. And then he brought him into the house, and Jersey was just like, what? You know, like, where am I going? Are you going to kill me? You know, he had no idea what was going on.
He just warped, man. Yeah.
Yeah. And he goes in and he meets the servants, and he you know, he thinks he can't even touch anything because he's going to make a mess, and he's not even worthy enough to be standing in the house. That struck me that, you know, his image of himself was that low as a slave that they don't even feel worthy to look the master in the eye. Mm-hmm. So he came a long way in this story, I must say, as slow as it was. Because I, too, thought, I mean, I finished the book, but I really thought it dragged, and it was painfully slow. It was like we've got this microscopic view of all his training when Malik started training him to, you know, use his intuition to develop the wine spells and everything he needed to know to become a master vine art. It was just like, did we need this day-to-day microscopic view of the training? It just got very boring to me and repetitive. And then when something happened, I remember getting excited. I got excited when Malik sent him to go and slay the sea monster that was killing the town, and the prince came and got him, and Malik sent Jersey to go and deal with it. And I thought, okay, something, you know, the plot's turning, something exciting's happening. And then he goes and he kills the sea monster and comes back with a chunk of the thing. And then it returns to a snail's pace. It's like, then when Malik sent him to go train with, Master Gordon, I go, okay, good. He's leaving Malik's, I forget the name of where Malik is. He's leaving there and he's going someplace new. And, you know, Malik's sending him to train, and that's never done. But because of this new threat, they need to try different things. And I go, okay, it's picking up now. And then when he gets there, it returns to a snail's pace. And we're learning about the walls, the decorations in every room, the how people are dressed. I mean, this microscopic view of these seemingly inconsequential things. I was just like, I think we got the layout of the kitchen at Gordon's place like two or three times.
It's really?
Like, yeah. It was like, okay, we get it. It's a huge place. It's huge. You know, we get the setting. I just felt like it was just waste of page time. And it just made the story really slow to me. Just like I was yawning.
It's filler. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how Monica received that. If she felt it was slow at all, did you?
I didn't. I guess I was picturing this thing as one of those role-playing game video games where you have the story there and then, you know, you're like, okay, now you have to learn the different wine tricks, kind of like a Zelda-type game.
Oh.
So well, I had the mindset of like a video game going on.
Oh, well, that would probably make it a little more interesting.
Yeah, that take on it is very interesting. Yeah. Because I wasn't even thrilled because I ended where they had slain the sea monster, and I didn't have any desire to go on.
Yeah.
You know. So you know, I my mindset. I mean, I read a lot of fantasy, and you know, this was just too slow and no action. And you know, I mean, if you had one bit of action. And I stopped there. Hello.
Yeah, the interest. I mean, I read it. I liked Jersey. And even at the end, I still liked Jersey. And I felt really bad for him when Vinart Gordon turned on him at the end, Monica.
Yeah, I was surprised at that.
Yeah, he wanted to save his own skin. And they were, you know, the mayor was, you know, people were in his ear and he was very insecure and believing anything and they were telling him, and somebody wanted to get Gordon out of there. So he turned on Jersey, you know, I was like, wow. And when his mirror broke, I remember the mirror he was supposed to use to communicate with Malik.
Right.
When they broke that, I was just like, oh my goodness, you know, what's going to happen to him. So I liked Jersey. I really liked him and had an interest to find out what was going to happen. Cause I think the author did a really good job of building his point of view and his character. So I liked him. So I did want to finish the book, but I was just, it was like, can we please move it along?
Now was Vineyard Gordon the one that was on the island? And they made the island disappear?
No.
Okay.
He's another Vinart that Malik sent Jersey to train with because this threat seemed to be bigger than anything he knew how to handle. And he even broke tradition and wrote to other Vinarts, because you know that they don't communicate with one another. They all master their own wine spells and they don't communicate with one another.
Right.
And so he broke that and, you know, wrote to some that I guess he respected, were well respected, and tried to see if they could figure out what was going on, why their fields were under attack and what was going on in these other places. And they didn't get anywhere. So he decided to try something new and send his apprentice to train with another Vinart that he respected, which was Gordon. Mm-hmm. So that's when Jersey went on the ship and went on the journey to travel to where Gordon was, which seemed to be a great distance, and then started training. What did Gordon specialize in? It was weather spells, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, because Jersey created this huge storm. Yeah, he specialized in weather spells and Malik specialized in healing spells, right. So, I mean, that part was interesting. It was, you know, with using the wine to, you know, make spells and everything. But the pacing, the plotting was way too slow for me. Nothing really happened in, let me look how many pages this book has. I have the hardcover one. It has 374 pages.
Yeah, and like maybe three things.
Yeah, maybe like three major plot point things happened. It's like, ugh, come on, really. So, you know, maybe high fantasy lovers, you know, a few other people in the group did like it. Brenda said she liked it. Catherine said she liked it. Roberta liked it. Our
oh,
other
did
co-moderator.
Roberta enjoy it too?
Yes, she did
okay.
enjoy it.
I know Kim couldn't get into it.
A lot
Robin
of people
couldn't get into it.
Yeah.
I believe Lori and Marilyn as well.
Yeah, several others said they just couldn't do it. And Robin.
Yeah, Robin. Mm-hmm. She was trying. Allie was trying to get into it. She's.
I think she said
she was having a hard time too this morning.
Yeah, she said she's going to finish it up today, I think. So, yeah, but you know, it was mixed. But I like that. I love when it's not everybody's loving it and not everybody's panning it, because then it's boring, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love the diversity of the book. I mean, diversity of the club, because so many members really enjoy some books, and there are some books that just aren't my cup of period.
Yeah.
In the group, and but I read them, and yeah. and you know, I like seeing everybody's different point of views.
Yes, and I'm really
glad. Far as,
Go ahead.
As far as you know, just where we're coming from, because we all like different genres. We all try to turn each other on to everything, mm-hmm. or different things, and. Picking something, you know, so different, you know, this is not a normal read for us. And it was really a nice break, but at the same time, you know, something just some people just couldn't do.
Yeah, but you know what? I love it when this happens. I don't vote for them. I never vote for the fantasy or the sci-fi or anything like that, because mm-hmm. it's not my cup of tea. But I'm still holding out hope that one day one is going to get me. One is going to keep me. And I'll enjoy it. The only one I've really enjoyed, like I said, in the group is The Neverending Story. And that's because I love the movie. I've seen the movie since I was little.
Oh, okay. And yeah, because you didn't like the time traveler's wife.
I liked the concept of the time. I think I gave it a C, but I thought it was just way too long. I enjoyed the if it were like 200 pages shorter, I would have loved that book. It was just, it was just dragged out way too much. But that's why the C for me. But I really enjoyed I thought it was a very unique concept. And she did it really well. She just wrote the book too long. It like overstayed its welcome.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, but yeah, I think there's a fantasy writer out there who can get me. So I'm not giving up. But like I was saying, I don't normally vote for them, but I do appreciate when they're picked because it diversifies our Cove history, you mm-hmm. know, and I love that. So for that reason, I like it. And then to have some people hate it, some people love it, some people like it, some people not so much. I love that when that happens.
Yeah. Well, that's the diversity of our group. And that's what I love about this group.
Yeah.
You know, especially, you know, Monica, you read some things that I'm really surprised that you're reading. And, Brenda, too. I was really, when we were talking about The Life of Pi, Eat, Pray, and Love this week, and Animal, Vegetable, Mineral, or mm-hmm. Miracle. And Under the Tuscan Sun. Brenda had read all those, and she's a more of a sci-fi fantasy type person.
Yeah.
And she enjoyed some of them and, you know, enjoyed the movie more and everything. But it's really nice to see that everybody is diverse.
Yeah, but guess what?
She steps out of the box.
She's like the rest of us who we have our favorite genre, and sci-fi fantasy is and stuff, paranormal and stuff might be someone else's favorite, but they can still, you know, I think the reason Brenda keeps coming back to the group and is in the group is because, you know, that one book that she reads with us is, you know, a step out of that fantasy tunnel, you know?
Exactly.
So, and that's why I enjoy when these types of books get picked, because it's my step into something that I would never touch otherwise.
Right.
Never.
Right.
So,
and it's really cool because so many people do love the paranormal, the sci-fi, the fantasy in this group as well.
Yeah.
Because it is a comfortable genre to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, but this one just didn't cut it for me.
And I really had high hopes for Flesh and Fire. I got my copy and I had it here, you know, well in advance, and I kept looking at it and I'm thinking, are you going to be the one? Are you going to be the fantasy novel that I just love, that surprises me? And unfortunately, it wasn't. But I like Jersey. So I wouldn't mind if when the next book comes out, I don't know if it's out yet, in the Vine
Art
War.
And it left it in a cliffhanger, too.
Yeah,
with the second one.
Yeah, to get back into the plot, the way it ended was Ayo and Mayalt. Is that, am I pronouncing that right?
I have no idea.
but the guy, Ayo, and I have to say, I was kind of suspicious of Ayo for a while.
I was too.
I really kind of thought, Jersey, Malik warned you not to trust anyone, and this guy, Ayo, just seems to be too much of your buddy. It's like he's just too funny, and, you know, like all of a sudden he's looking out for you, and why would he be? But anyway, I don't know. That may still end up being true, that Ayo isn't somebody he can trust, but as for right now, Ayo and the mayor's daughter, Mayalt, they are the ones who rescued him from, because he was going to be killed.
Right.
With Gordon. So they rescued him and they're running off to God knows where now. I don't know if he's going to head back to Malik, but, you know, that's how it ended up. And I really just would love to know what happens later, but I don't want to read the second book. Because if it's, I mean, if somebody reads it, like if one of the, if you guys read it, Monica, or you read it and you say it's better, then I might try it. I may try it because I like Jersey and I want to know, I want to see his journey to becoming a master. Because I think he'll be a really interesting character to watch through, take that step up, you know, to that evolution. But I would never read it if it was this painfully slowly paced as this one.
Well, you know,
I guess I'm more of a character reader. If I like the character, I'll usually like the book. If the character, because there have been authors that make the character such a horrible person that I really don't care what happens to them and lose interest in the book.
Mm-hmm. Really? Because, I mean, I loved, like, well, bad characters to an extent, like Hannibal Lecter and stuff like that. But, you know, I would have really been upset if I had finished this book and found out about the cliffhanger. That would really tick me off, because I read one book and it was in paperback, and the next book was due out like a week later in hardcover, and they left a huge cliffhanger. And I'm like, what? Hey, now I got to go out and buy this book? Come on. You know?
Well, that's
that
how
really
it is.
Upset me.
Well, the Vine Art War is a series, and this is book one. So I don't think that's not, I don't read too many series, but it's not unusual for them to end up the books with cliffhangers, because they, of course, they want you to go and get the next in the series. So that's expected.
But it was a Lord of the Rings type cliffhanger, like it just stops.
Yeah. And you're like, oh my God.
That would have really upset me. Oh, no. Because, I mean, like with the Harry Potter stuff, at least, you know, things were wrapped up at the end. But you knew that you had to go into another story to see how it would end up, you know, killing, what's his name from Harry Potter? Voldemort. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, my feeling about Flesh and Fire was that when I turned that last page and you saw what was going on the island that they made disappear.
Yes.
I just thought, I felt like, you know, my mouth was so tired from yawning. And so, you know, I had interest in Jersey and, you know, how they rescued him. At that point, my interest was kind of mild. It was kind of, you know, lukewarm. But yeah, because it had just been such a long journey. And I just think it's so interesting, you know, when Monica says she was looking at it more as a video game, I was like, wow, if I were reading it in that way, maybe I would have enjoyed it more.
I mean, well, you have to play the video games too, because I really don't do all that stuff. I do my Facebook stuff, but, you know, I never play around with the video games. But that's a nice way to look at it in an aspect, you know, as a game and trying to get through the book. Monica, kudos to you.
Okay. So let's talk about, any scenes that we remember from the book.
When the cart tipped over and those, slaves, some of the slaves had died, and he healed one of them. And then the one that I'm guessing he was in a coma, he couldn't heal him because his mind was already gone.
Right.
And it said, you know, well, his body's still alive.
Right.
But even though his body's still alive, his mind is gone and there's no bringing him back.
And the wine spells can't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a very powerful scene, yeah.
And then the master's like, oh, well, he's just a slave. I mean, they're born, they work, they die. You know, it's like, he was like, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
It's such a no big deal attitude about him. And I was like, well, he's, you know, a person. And
not to them. They don't see slaves as people.
Yeah, that's true. We were, in fact, we were talking about that last night. My sister was learning about the Three-Fifths Compromise in school.
Mm-hmm.
About how the slaves were going to be considered as far as representation goes. And how even Chief Standing Bear had to fight for his right to be considered a human being.
Yeah. And for me, I think there's definitely the scene with the sea monster. It was like, the way that was described was like, oh my God, that was, and then the chunks of the thing, because they were shooting arrows at it, they were shooting, trying to like kill it.
Right.
Monica, you're breathing again. We can hear your breathing into the mic again. But yeah,
better?
Yeah, that's better. Yeah, and that scene stood out to me. And then when Jersey first walked into the house, for some reason that scene struck me, because I was just, I was right with him. I could feel that he was just in another world, and he had like a fish out of water. And felt completely like he didn't belong there, and had no idea what the master wanted with him. He didn't know for a long time, you know, why he had been asked to come in, and he was just automatically thinking it had to be bad. It couldn't be good.
Yeah, and he had just been beaten, and so it's like, okay, he's going to beat me and then bring me into his house.
And then all Malik did, the other thing, all Malik did was cuff him. He was constantly hitting him. Like, what the hell? He was constantly hitting him in Jersey. And then that was what was nice about when he went to be with Gordon, because Gordon never did that. Gordon seemed so much cooler. I liked him a lot better than Malik. He was doing his yoga. You know, he was like
oh my God, really?
Yeah, he was like a new agey Vinart, because he was out in the field doing his yoga. And he was really cool.
Okay.
Until he turned on Jersey at the end, of course.
Yeah, and that just, because he seemed so like a friend to him.
Yeah, yeah. But I think when your life is threatened, you just never know what people will do. Because look at that, you know, he just figured, okay, let me put the blame on Jersey to save my hide. So.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's defense mode and everything.
Yeah.
And the What really stood out with me was the vat spilling over. The way the overseer struck the youngest slave in the neck and broke his neck with the whip.
With one strike.
One snap, yeah. And I was like totally stunned. And then Malik calling, you know, Jersey over, and he had gotten whipped a couple of times. And you know, that was just very vile to me, and just like, wow, what a trip and everything. And then, of course, you know, following him through the path, and he was looking through the gazebos and everything, or the awnings going into the house and everything, and still thinking he's going to be dead soon.
Yeah.
You know, like you had said, but I mean, it all started at the vat.
Yeah.
And that was just horrific, where I had to put the book down and just stop, you know, reading.
I remember you were saying something about the gardens. It reminded you of your grandfather?
Yeah. That was one thing that I really, really did enjoy. My grandfather and I have a lot of memories, really nice memories of my father's family. He had a shed that was the size of a small trailer, and it had awnings, and you know, you would go under the awning to get into the tool shed, but he had all the grapevines.
Right.
And I remembered helping him in the garden and also picking the grapes, and he would put it in the root cellar, and he would try to make wine, which was really fascinating. They were from the Depression. And my grandfather was actually a very talented man, you know, as far as, you know, fooling around with things. And he also drew and whatnot, and was a mechanic. That's where my father got his, you know, mechanical genius. And I picked it up from him, too. But, yeah, it was really bringing back fond memories of my grandfather.
Yeah, that's really cool. And there was one other line I really liked, that Gordon, Vineart Gordon, said to Jersey about why all the other Vineart's were against Malik sending him to train with Gordon. They didn't like it at all. And he said, you know, they do not want to ripen. They do not want to change. It would be better for you to fail than for them to see that it can be different. And that really struck me, because I think that applies to the human condition in general, that people would rather see someone else fail at something than to realize that, oh, that can be done. They rather stick with the status quo. And that's exactly what these Vineart's were. You know, I think that was going to be their downfall. And it's a good thing that Malik was able to break with that tradition.
Yeah, well, he's trying to make Jersey into more of a jack of all trades and to be able to do more. Maybe he saw that potential in Jersey.
Well, he needed it because they were under attack. The whole place was
vineyards.
Yeah, yeah.
All of
their
vineyards, mm-hmm. from the gods or whatever, which I saw, but I didn't understand. And you know, I thought it was really good that, you know, he picked it up so quickly. So Jersey was a talented kid. Mm-hmm. Which was, you know, nice to see. It's kind of like, in fact, I related it to Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Harry Potter didn't know that he was a wizard. You know, he just, you know, thought of something and it happened.
Right.
And he's like, whoa, you know, how did this happen? And Jersey had certain feelings, but he couldn't acknowledge them or understand them.
Mm-hmm. So any other scenes for you, Monica? Or anything else you want to share? Because we're at 30 minutes now, so we're going to wrap it up.
Well, I'm glad, because this wouldn't have been a book I would pick up and read.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I did, because I was surprisingly enjoyed it. And there's been a couple other books that we picked that I probably would never have picked up and really, really enjoyed.
That's
so maybe
cool.
If I have really low expectations, I'll enjoy it a lot more.
You'll be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, well, I was really surprised at how much everybody liked The Dark Horse. This
oh,
one, their
well,
bonus
that was
book.
The bonus book, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, really, you know, just struck me as, like, you know, I've been enjoying this, you know, equestrian thing since I was a kid, and everybody was learning about dressage and, you know, the things that go on in the horse world. And I thought that was great, you know, because you learn things. And that's another reason why we reread these books, you know, learning about vines and vineyards and, you know, how things are run and everything.
Yeah, because
so.
I think with The Flesh and Fire, I had read that the author actually did a lot of research in vineyards. So the actual process of making wine was pretty authentic. And she added in, you know, the wine spells and the healing, the different types of healing wines and fire wines and weather wines, and all the Vineart's specialized in their own thing. I know you guys were saying the title made sense to you, Cheryl, but I don't know. I still don't know what the title means.
Well, I'm looking at the cover again. You said you had the hardcover.
Uh-huh. With the man with the hand on fire.
Right, exactly. In the beginning, with the prelude, one of the vineyards noticed there was, one of the slaves brought him, there was bugs infesting all of the vines.
Right.
And he called the sin washer, and he hit a fire spell,
mm-hmm.
on the sin washer. And he dissolved, you know, with the fire, but also the fire was in his hands. You know, so I imagined and envisioned the flesh and the fire just from there.
Yeah, but I
right.
guess... Oh, go ahead, Monica.
And then when he killed that serpent, he brought the flesh back. So it's like when they have to kill these things, they get it, they accumulate their flesh.
Oh.
What they do with it, I'm not... Or why exactly, I didn't really get that part, but I know they collected the flesh of the... serpents,
yeah.
and things that are attacking the field.
Jersey
that's,
took that that stinking... thing back to Malik instead of taking pay from the prince.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he was supposed to get paid for his services of going and taking care of the sea monster. that, and it was so gross the way they described it, because it had all these things moving in its neck, and it was the people that it had swallowed. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, it was pretty gruesome.
Yes, that part was very gruesome. And then...
and I'm a medical person. I have a study of these things.
Yeah, that part was kind of gross. But, then he goes back with this flesh sample, and by the time he got back to Malik's, back home, it was, like, really, really reeking.
Right. Yeah, well, it's rotting, yeah.
Yeah, and I was, like, saying, I wonder if he's going to get in trouble for not getting paid. Why couldn't he take the money and the stinking flesh thing? Did the prince want the flesh?
Wow.
But anyway, yeah. So that's our discussion of Flesh and Fire by Laura Ann Gilman. And we want to thank everyone for listening, and stay tuned for next month's episode, where we will be talking about Galileo's Daughter by Dava Sobel.
Which is nonfiction as well.
Is it?
Yeah, I do believe, yeah, because I downloaded it onto my Kindle, and I believe it's nonfiction.
Okay, cool.
And I'm like, wow, this really, really sounds like it'll be fun, and that is my quiz, and
yeah.
I will definitely get through it and all, and I'm really looking forward to that one.
Okay, well, bye, everybody. See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.